This is part two in our discussion of the Rambam. The Rambam was born in 1135 at the age of 13 when the Almohads conquered Cordova in Spain, where the Rambam was living. He's forced to flee with his family. He flees to eventually in Fez, Morocco. And at some point, it's not safe for him there either. And where we last left off was about 1165, at about the age of 30, when he's forced to leave Fez, Morocco, and his departure with his family was prompted by the martyrdom of Yehuda ibn Susan, who had been called upon to forsake his religion, and he preferred death to apostasy. The Rambam nearly met the same fate, but a Muslim theologian intervened and saved him from danger. So his family had to leave. Now, during this journey, the Rambam continued writing his commentary on the Mishnah, his first major work, and he finished when he was about 30 years old. The Rambam arrives in Akko with his father and his brother David. This was the first time that he was in a Christian state, but there was an insignificant and declining Jewish community, and there was a lack of educated individuals in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rambam leaves, and he moves to Egypt. The question is, how can the Rambam move to Egypt? In the Rambam's Code of Jewish Law, in Hilchos Malachim, Perakei Halacha Zayin, he paskins that umutar lishkod b'chol ha'olam chutz me'eretz Mitzrayim. He's allowed to live anywhere in the whole world except for Egypt. He says, hakol osur lish yashiv ba, you're not allowed to live in it. Bishlomo Makomos, he's here at Torah Shel Loshu Mitzrayim. He cites three places where the Torah commanded us not to return to Egypt. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Lo Sosif and Lashuba Davar Ze'o, don't return to this place again. Lo Sosif O Lerosa, don't continue to see it again. Lo Sosif O Lerosa, Ma'od Adalam, don't see them again. Va Alexandria, Bichla HaYisur, Alexandria is included in the prohibited city. So, the question is, how is he allowed to live there when he himself said, you're not allowed to live there? So one of the commentaries of the Rambam, the Korban Isha, he cites the Ritva. Ritva lived a little bit after the Rambam in Spain. And he says, Umihu teima milsa mal samcho olam lagur bizman hazeh b'mitzrayim. Could go in HaRambam zava chama gedolei macherim. How could it be that the world, the Olam has a relied on the fact that they can live nowadays in Egypt? For example, the Rambam. So the Ritva provides three suggestions. First of all, he says, Yeshom Shoso na Yoros Kavarnis Babalu Venech Ravu Ve'elo Yoros Acheros Hem Shenis Yashu Akar Kach. He suggests that maybe only the cities, the Egyptian cities in the time of the Torah, when the Bnei Yisrael lived in Egypt, when the Bnei Yisrael were slaves in Egypt, only those cities are cities which you are not allowed to live in, but you're allowed to move to other cities in Egypt that did not exist in the time of the Torah. Rav Elazar mimitz teirat, shelo asar hakosuv el elech b'derech hahi shebe'eretz Yisrael derech amin bar lemitzrayim. The Rav Elazar mimitz, a 12th century Tosfos, said that it's only forbidden on the same route from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt, but because the pasuk says Lo Sosif Lashuv Bader Chazao, don't return in this path, and so that's a second possibility. Now it's only a problem if you're traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt, and the third possibility. And this is all the Ritva. The Ritva first says his own possibility, then he says the Reim, and the third possibility says this, it only applies when Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. Now that we're scattered in all corners of the land, and nowadays, all of Chutz Laaretz is the same. There's no special prohibition to live in Egypt. So the Ritva cites three different reasons. Again, one is that only old cities old Egyptian cities, and for the time of the Torah, were forbidden to live in, but new cities are not forbidden. Secondly, maybe it's only forbidden to travel the same route, the opposite route that the Bnei Yisrael travel from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. To go from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt is forbidden, but from another place, it's not forbidden to go to Egypt. And third, maybe this whole prohibition only applies when Eretz Yisrael are living securely in, when the Jews are living securely in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, the Korban Isha writes that these three reasons don't help for the Rambam, because, for example, the Rambam writes that it's forbidden to live in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, so even in cities that didn't exist back then. And the Rambam didn't say it's only forbidden to travel from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt, even though I think the Rambam himself did travel from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. But the Rambam says, no, it's just usher to live in Egypt. And he says it's he also says it's usher to live even now. So these three answers are possible answers for some who may have lived in Eretz Yisrael, but it wouldn't apply to the Rambam. The Rambam held it's usher to live in Egypt nowadays. The Radvaz was born in 1479 in Spain. He left for Tzfat in 1492, and they left to Fez, Morocco, in 1510. And then he left for Egypt in 1517. He became the chief rabbi in Egypt for 40 years. And the Ravans, in his commentary in Hilchos Malachim and Perkei Halacha Zayin, asked the very same question. And he argued that maybe the Torah only forbade us Lered Lagur Shamuli Hishtakeya. It's only forbidden to live there permanently, when you decide to live there permanently. As he cites Yerushalmi, which says, the yeshiva ule, you're allowed to go for business. You just can't live there in a sense of permanence. And then he said, and once you, and so if you decide to go there, to dwell there for a short period of time, and then after the fact, you decide to live there permanently, so then maybe there is no action. It's not a lav, but it's an iser ba'alma. It's not the same level. In other words, if you go move to Egypt with the intent to live there permanently, so then that's a complete prohibition. But if your intent is just to live there temporarily and to move back, and then you, for some reason, decide to stay, it's not as severe. And if it's difficult, it's the only place you can live where you can afford to live there and afford to, you can't live elsewhere for financial reasons, then it might be okay. And in fact, the Radvaz suggests that the Rambam was Anus, Hoya Pia Malchus, that he had to stay there because he was the Rofe to the Melech Velasarim. He was the doctor to the Sultan. So the Rambam may have initially gone there not to live there permanently, but once he got the job of being the doctor for the Sultan, so then he was stuck. And therefore, he was a state of Anus, and that's why he didn't violate these prohibitions of living in Egypt. And the Radvaz says, I myself lived there a long time to learn Torah, to teach Torah, to establish a yeshiva, and eventually I came back to Yerushalayim. But that seems to be the reason, perhaps, how the justification for the Rambam to live there initially. He was only planning on living there for a certain period of time, but he got stuck there being the sultan to the being the doctor to the sultan. It should be noted that in a work called Kaftor Vaferach, that's written by Rav Ishtori HaParchi, he lived in southern France in the 13th to the 14th century, he cites a report, Vishamati b'Mitzrayim, mipi Rav Shmuel Echa mibnei b'rav shel Rambam. So he cites a report from a Rav Shmuel, one of the grandchildren of the Rambam. Sheke sheharambam hayachosim shmuel bigeres shlucha. When Rambam sent a letter, hayamasam, he would conclude the letter, Hakosev haover b'chol yom shloshalavim ploni, that the one who is writing this letter violates three lavim, three prohibitions each and every day. The Rambam felt that he was sinning. What could he do? He was in an unavoidable circumstance. He had to stay, couldn't leave. But he felt that he himself was at a in a situation where he was violating Yisurim, living in Egypt. What could he do? He couldn't leave because he's the doctor of the Sultan, but he felt very bad about it. Amarti lo derechati nechama shema harav zel hayamuchach lamol chel b'nei shahaya rofei lemelch mitzrayim. So he writes that I said to him, partial comfort, that maybe he was forced to stay there because he was the doctor to the Sultan. And we find in the Gemara and Bava Kama there was enough tulos ben Rav Ruvain that he was allowed to have this kind of pagan haircut because he was karov lamachos, he was close to the throne. So again, so maybe that also is a justification for Ram to do this, to live there. But in any case, the Ram did live in Egypt. Again, it's probably a situation of anus. It's not exactly clear what prompted his move to Cairo after a few months of living in Eretz Yisrael, but the family moved there. They first arrived in Alexandria when the Ram was 31 years old. It seems that that is where his father died. So his brother dealt in precious stones, although it's likely the Rambam was somewhat involved in the business. There's a letter written by Professor Goitin about the Jewish communities of the Arab world. And in the letter describes about how there were two brothers, and one of them was a merchant and he went traveling, and the other one stayed at home to take care of the affairs at home. And that's probably what happened with the Rambam and his brother David. The Rambam, Moshe ben Maimon, he stayed at home, took care of the needs at home, and his brother David went out. He was a merchant abroad. And that's how they engaged in their business. The Rambam, that's how they accorded themselves in such a way. It was commonplace to do that. The Rambam could have been a rabbi and get paid, but the Rambam famously opposed this. And, you know, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says in Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hey, that Rabbi Tzadok says that you're not supposed to make the Torah as a crown to become great through it. And Hillel said, if you use the crown of Torah for your own personal benefit, you'll chalaf, you're going to be, you know, moved away, you're going to be destroyed. And halamata kol nenem divrei Torah, no tochayav min olam. Anyone who draws benefit from divrei Torah, his life will be taken from the world. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Gimel Halacha Yud, that you if you occupy yourself in Torah and you don't engage in malacha and work and you take funds from charity, Hareza Chilul Hashem Ubizes Torah, you engage in a Chilul Hashem and you desecrate the Torah. That's not how the Torah is supposed to be. If you can study Torah, you can learn Torah, you can teach Torah, but you have to have a parnasa, you have to earn a living for something else. The Rambam tried to bring proofs in his commentary on the Mishnah Avos. He said, we know that Hillel HaZaken, he chopped wood when he was studying in front of Shemaya and Vav Talyot. And we know if Chanina ben Dosa would subsist on just a small measure of carobs from one Arab, from Arab Shabbos to another Arab Shabbos. And we don't find that these individuals, there's another Karna, a judge, and he was also he also was a tremendous scholar, but he would not accept payment. He would only accept payment if he had to judge a case for the time he had to take off from work. And we never find, says the Rambam, that these that the people of their generations were known as cruel people and not gomli chasadim. We don't find the scholars criticizing the people for not financing them their study of Torah. But rather what, says the Rambam, says that the scholars understood that it's a chilul Hashem for them to learn Torah and to accept money for it. So that's why the Rambam himself did not accept money to be a rabbi in Egypt. The Tashbetz just points out, in Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Mem Zayin, that the Rambam's proofs are not necessarily so compelling. For example, could be that Hillel was only chopped wood to earn a living when he was a student, when he was studying in front of Shemaya Vav Talmud before he became the Nasi, but maybe after he became the Nasi, maybe then he was employed, did receive a salary. And maybe Rav Chanina ben Dosa was an exception. He was an exceptionally pious individual. It should be noted that the Kesef Mishnah of Yosef Cairo, in his commentary on the Rambam, writes that notwithstanding what the Rambam says and what he writes, that he didn't accept a salary, Kesef Mishnah, Nechos Tama Torah, Perakim Malacha Yud writes, V'ra'idu kol chach be'Yisrael kodim zman Rabbeinu, v'achrav noagim litol scharim bin atzibur. And we see that all the scholars of Klal Yisrael, before the Rambam's time and after the Rambam's time, would take a salary from the community. V'gam kinoda she'alocha kidivrei Rabbeinu v'perus ha-Mishnah. And even if we were to agree that the Lacha is like the Rambam in this commentary of the Mishnah, Efshe Shishkimu Kein Kol Chach Miyadoros Mishum Eis La'asos La'Hashem Eferi Torah Techa. That could be that all the scholars of the generations agreed that they were allowed to take salary from the seaboard because it was necessary to break the Torah because times necessitated it. Why? She'il lo ha'isa parnasas halom yivam lamdim mitsuya. That if they wouldn't be able to have a parnasa, lo yichon litruach batorah karoi, they wouldn't be able to occupy themselves in Torah appropriately. If they had to worry about earning a living, then they wouldn't dedicate themselves to Torah as much as it could have been. And v'hoisa Torah mishtachachas chas v'shalom, the Torah would have been forgotten. In other words, eis lasos, we wanted our Torah scholars to work hard at Torah, to teach Torah, to make sure Torah was being given to the masses, being taught to the masses. So we financed the scholars both before the Rambam and after the Rambam. Next, in the next session, we will discuss the Karaites, who were a major force in Egypt when the Rambam was living there and how the Rambam dealt with them. And we'll discuss the Rambam's issue. It's not only a 21st century issue, but it was even an issue in the Rambam's time about people talking during davening and how the Rambam dealt with that. And we will also discuss his code of Jewish law, his famous code of the Mishneh Torah, and the Mora Nevuchim in our next session.